Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and we're going to have none of this beer.
Not true, my friend. I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys, and this week we're reading more of the Booker Long List and regretting it every time. This week we are reading, The Stoneyard Devotional by Charlotte Wood. Nate, are you having a beer?
Yeah, I'm starting with a beer. Okay, so some of this book is about food and about how the main character becomes like takes over cooking at the like convent that she's working at. Because at first she's like, "Oh, this food is so bland. Don't you think they would like sweet potato fries?" My other half.
I think they would like that.
Yes. Mm. I like sweet potato fries. Okay, so this is a double dry-hopped India Pale Ale, mother half, that is...
Wow, bold.
Some percent alcohol.
That's an impressive one, Nate.
8.5, yeah, there you go. did not think of anything else. I had only read the very beginning of the book when I went to the beer store.
It's like...
Mice job.
It's like saying...
The mice had not appeared yet in the book. I could have done something with that. If only I had known.
So, you know, there's a scene in Citizen Kane where he pulls a chair out for somebody. It's a film about furniture.
He would never do that.
No. Orson Welles, you need to pull out a love seat for him. So, this book, holy Jesus, where do you even begin?
It's at the beginning.
Good point.
It's a very good place to start.
And you know what? Going to the beginning might feel like might give you a bit of a warm glow. This beer is called Warm Glow. And it's from Finback. And that wasn't a fart. That was my glass hitting the microphone. I'm sure I could never do it again.
I don't believe you.
That was you.
Oh, excuse me. One of those was real. We've had this before.
What is it like?
It's pretty nice. Okay. So the main character, I don't even remember if
she's unnamed.
Fucking thank God. There was a point
like
in the
Fight
book.
Club.
Yeah, I am Jack's habit. There was a point in the book where you go from part one to part two, where I was like, "Oh, it's a different narrator, right?" I wasn't sure for a while. It took me almost the end of part two to be like, "Oh, that's the same person." Just 5 minutes later, she's in Australia, and she in the beginning she just goes. She's like, she's kind of like eat, pray, loving, and she's on a retreat. Going on a retreat,
giving herself a little retreat
to an abbess. What the fuck is like a monastery for ladies? Called?
A nunnery.
Convent. I don't know what the fuck the right word is. Even though I think they're Catholics. I should probably know
these
words.
They are Catholic, yeah.
In the hinterlands of Australia. And she's just like, it's fucking weird. Goddamn weird.
Her marriage is breaking down and her job is falling apart because she works in like species preservation. And it hasn't been going well.
Because have you seen the earth lately? Yeah, it hasn't been going well.
So her response is, I'm going to go hide for a little while and try and get my shit together.
Earth, take note.
Yeah.
So she goes there. And then it's just it's very dreamy, you know, we sat in and they told us to sit in the pew and the nuns came out and one nun was kind of tall. That was weird. Once when I was in school, we played volleyball for an afternoon and then a dingo ate a baby. And then you're like, okay, this is Australia. Okay, cool. And that goes on for a while. And then the book ends.
A lot of it is her adjusting to, because she's like a city person. And, you know, you go to a place where you are alone. She's functionally alone. Like, she has a little cabin. Like, I guess it's the convent or whatever the fuck you call it.
It's kind of a compound, it sounds like.
Yeah, they do their thing, and then they pay for it by having people come and, like, stay in these little cabins that they can use as, like, a vacation spot or, you know, a retreat, like they would in Eat, Pray, Love. But in this, you go to hell if you do it wrong. But she, in the cabin, she's like just sitting by herself, contemplating the death of her marriage and of all life as we know it. And so she's pretty bummed out. And she's like, I'm just going to lay sleep on the floor and cry a while.
That'll fix it.
Also, her parents have died early in her life, but she went to visit their graves and is just feeling all kinds of bummed out because, you know, they're also dead. Like
that's
her marriage.
Part of the titular stone yard. Right?
Yes. And then, you know, it's a retreat. So it's like, you know, 3 or 4 days and then you go home and that's the end of part one.
Mm-hmm. That was fun. And then part two begins and it's sometime later. I don't know if it's ever really clarified how much
it's
later.
In my ebook, it's like, oh, 4 pages to the next chapter, 6 pages to the next chapter, 3 pages to the next chapter. Oh, sweet. Okay. Then I get to part two, 148 pages to the next chapter. Oh, fuck. Because all of part two was one chapter in my ebook.
But there's like little breaks because it's like...
Oh, yeah. Because it's written like it's a diary. I mean, it's also not 100% this is what a person would write in their diary, but it is supposed to kind of be what a person would write in their diary.
Remember
it's like skimming through her thoughts.
I was going to say, remember the pensive from Harry Potter? It's kind of like that. The novelization of her pensive. Here's a random little thing I thought that day. The rest of the day didn't matter. I noticed there was a mouse. Mice.
It does happen because it's like a few years, maybe two, maybe three, maybe four. We don't really know. But she is now living at the convent full time, nunning it up. She is not a nun. She's not turned to the Jesus. She's just living there.
In fact, she says multiple times that she's an atheist. And there's even a passage when the nuns, who she lives with, the other like four of them or something like that. There's not that many, and they're like talk about, you know, loving, falling in love with Christ. And she's like, it's so hard not to roll my eyes, but I try not to.
Yeah.
Well, that sort of supercilious attitude is going to really help the planet.
It's not that silly.
it's mediocrely silliest.
But then the news comes one day that they're getting some mail. It's a dead body.
They're like, men at the convent? Not that kind of mail.
So there is one guy that's always hanging around, like a bad habit. But they're getting a long time
critical
back.
Mass of bad Catholic jokes.
Hey, Abbott. So, Judas. A while back, one of the nuns at this place that they are, I'm just going to call it
back in the 80s.
Yeah, the ancient times. One of them went to Thailand to help women there do stuff. Probably, you know, abusive prostitution stuff. Just to help them out because it's bad there. And someone killed her. And it was the priest at the local thing.
In the billiards room priest. With the candlestick.
Yes.
But it was the American priest.
Because that's what we do, baby. But no one ever found her body. And the church just kind of hushed it up because, you know, that's what they do. And now there was like a flood and a tree fell over and it was full of nun bones. So they're like, we found her. And we're going to bring those... They want the bones
zero
to come back home.
Bones? Is that what you're saying?
I forgot. More like the concept of nun than the number. Or no, that's still a number. I don't know.
Okay, that joke didn't land. Okay, cut that. Cut that.
Much like the flying nun. She rarely
landed
herself.
I don't even know what
herself.
That is.
That was a show in the 60s starring Sally Field.
Was she a nun?
Yeah, which is funny. I'm pretty sure Sally Field is not Catholic. Nun,
is that why a group of nuns is called a flight?
It's a gaggle of geese and a flight of nuns. I have beer. Fuck this book.
Beer.
This is the oldest beer in my house, and I don't know why I still have it.
Much like the Catholic Church.
Well, it's been around for a while. It's be harder to get rid of it.
Much like the Catholic Church.
I know I bought this beer before COVID.
Wow.
I bought it whenever that Cookie Puss beer came out.
And this book takes place during COVID.
There you go.
Yeah, it does. And I don't know why.
So the nuns, some of them are new nuns, right? They're like novices. And you could say novices are pretty green, couldn't you?
Yeah.
This beer is called Captain Lawrence Barrel Select Green. And it's a sour ale, a dry hop sour ale aged in oak barrels that I bought in like 2019. And I was like, I'll just hold on to that and see what happens.
Hopefully it's still nice.
I don't care anymore.
Well, let's see.
What was it?
It's a sour ale. It's like a barrel aged, you know, wild sour, like they could just sit around for it. Like, when I went there, I was like, "How?" They had this whole thing of a bunch of different sour beers, and I was like, "What are the details of that? Can I like read one of your pieces of paper about your beers, like that they have at breweries?" And the guy's like, "It's all in my head." I was like, "Oh, you suck." But like, I wanted something.
Oh, it was an imaginary beer.
I wanted something that I could just put in the closet or the fridge and like. Who knows what's going to happen to that beer?
And you chose the wrong one.
Well, a bottle-aged sour, it's going to go on a journey. You just don't know where or when. It actually isn't that bad. I don't love sour beers. I like the idea of them more than I actually
This is back when they were like actually sour and not like, this is a firecracker ice pop in a can.
Yeah, no, this is tart, funky, more of the traditional sour style. So it's mellowed out and it's actually pretty good, in a very like champagne-y in terms of its body
dryness.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's actually pretty good, I gotta say. Because honestly, I've never really been blown away by a Captain Lawrence beer. This is very good.
They're mice at best.
Yeah, maybe. I think you heard us the first time, which makes this less fun.
You've already made that joke. Four times.
We're going to keep making it all the whole time.
We started. When you were taking a piss, we were like, let's say it's mice every time. See how long it takes. And his fucking old ears work. And he heard it the first time. Really ruined it for me. So yeah, some of the nuns are green.
And, yeah. But they're getting this body back and they're like, great. We're going to bury her here at the compound. And give her a proper funeral because she's just been, she didn't get that the first time. But, you know, it's going to take some bureaucracy to get through because you can't just bury bodies wherever you want because they're not in America where you can do that.
Well, it's oddly, an island nation of the descendants of criminals are really picky about laws.
Yeah, certain ones. But then also, There's sometimes like mice coming out. There's some mice coming out, and they're like, oh, there's a lot of mice, above average amount number of mice. You guys are dealing with all these mice. And that's most of the book.
Yeah, so this takes place in Australia. And it is only very subtly hinted that it's during the pandemic. They're during the COVID pandemic. But what they talk about all the time is the plague of mice. So at first, when she gets there, like years, you know, she's there for years. And so she's like, oh, and there's some mice, there's a mouse. And, you know, they're all women, so they all scream in terror whenever there's a mouse. But there are no men around, so they actually have to do something about it. And
there's one guy.
And sort of the main character, the author, the narrator, is like more like, yeah, okay, I'll set the mouse traps. Yeah, whatever, but... And so there's just like a hint at like, oh, there are some mice around and they're going to get in. But then there's literally a plague, like billions of them.
It's more like the 10 plagues of Egypt, like of Moses.
Yes.
Plague.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and then like they buy all the mousetraps they can possibly get, and then like they set them out and they can hear them going off like within minutes of putting them out all the time. And they have to like, they have to keep emptying them, you know,
they can't even buy the mousetraps because at the store, the mice have eaten the like fiber optic cable for the credit card machine. Yeah. So they're buying them on credit, like they're like store credit. Like, we owe you for this mousetrap.
And also the mousetraps are being rationed because everyone's trying to buy them.
Dude, I saw a thing on the news a couple years ago about these mice outbreaks in Australia, and it's a real thing. They were showing this guy walking around his barn, and you would think the floor was shifting into another dimension. Like the way it just scattered when a light hit them.
That's scary.
There's no predators for them, you know.
They need cats.
They need a lot of cats.
Yeah, shitload.
Send them 1 billion cats.
But it does remind me of this joke, Nate, and you probably know this. How many mice does it take, Nate, to screw in a light bulb?
Is it 2, but nobody knows how they got in
there?
That's
it. Yeah, very good. Yeah. All right.
How did you know that?
That's impressive.
Heard that one before.
But how did they get in there?
I actually thought it was funny about how as the plague of mice progresses, at first they're all like, ooh, a mouse, ooh, and then it just gets worse and worse and worse. But they also they get used to it, and they like have a ditch in the back where they're throwing the mouse bodies, but that just gets completely full. And then they have to like dig a bigger trench, and they have to get the guy who's kind of like their neighbor to bring in like a backhoe to dig a bigger trench just to like bury all the mouse bodies.
For some reason, they don't want to burn them. They don't want to give the mice a Viking funeral.
Because that was in their spirits to heaven.
Mouse Halla, I believe. Yeah.
That's true.
Rat Halla? I don't know. One of those is better.
I don't know enough about mice or Valhalla to make a better version of that.
And the mice are chewing through like the gas lines to the stove, and they're chewing through
keys.
Yeah. And
the felt tips that cover the hammers. So she's hearing like shitty music at night. She's like, oh, someone put Skrillex on again. I'm like, no, there's mice in the piano.
Nate, would you call the mass grave for mice a mausoleum? No?
No, it's a mouse grave.
Uh-oh. Yeah, it works too. Too soon.
In the meantime, another thing happens, which is that some super nun is coming. She's like, I'm here to fucking nun it up. And she is
taking none of your shit.
She's not taking none of your shit. She's never taken a shit. None of it. She's very backed up.
She's like Kim Jong-il. She's 100% efficiency. But this character was introduced, foreshadowed, 6 pages earlier. So
book that's, you know, not very long, that's percentage-wise quite early.
But one of the things that's going on throughout this whole thing is the narrator, and she's like, I remember this time my mom did this. I remember this time this happened. Because one of the themes is forgiveness. Something Catholics claim to know about.
Even if they don't love you anymore.
Oh, is that Don Henley? She's like
that eagle roar.
I remember once there was this girl at our school and we didn't like her because she was, and her mom beat her. She was dirty and she got boobs earlier than everybody and we were mean to her and everyone was. And then one day we attacked her like it was the fucking Walking Dead.
Yeah.
We just swarmed her
in class.
And she bit me. And then the teachers are like, the one teacher was like, what the fuck is wrong with you kids? And then another teacher came and was like, what the fuck is wrong with that girl?
Doesn't she know she's a poor?
She's a poor girl. And then the other was like, she bit me on the hand. It's not right. Or whatever. Crikey.
Get a tetanus shot.
Yeah. And then that girl dropped out of school and everyone forgot about her. And you're like, wow.
Except the narrator.
That's a weird anecdote. And then 3 pages later, that girl is a celeb. She's like the Mother Teresa of 2020.
Perhaps she's reflecting on all the times that she failed to make things better.
Is this a joke or like
no,
actually?
Like, I mean,
a,
maybe.
Yeah. Like, I think it's the point of the book.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you were Vulcan chessing me on a joke there.
But yeah, this nun chick shows up. She's like, I'm here to escort the body, but I'm gonna actually just hang out here for a while because I don't like paperwork and I can't take a plane anywhere because it's COVID. So She's stuck there with them for a long time.
But she's a celebrity activist nun. You know, she like
she doesn't even wear a habit. She just has a nun demeanor.
She sails with Greenpeace and like throws the jars of stinky butter at ships and stuff like that. You know, she does the that kind of stuff.
She's out in front.
Chains herself to a gate. You know, she's one of those types. So actually, she's better than Mother Teresa, who did nothing. So that's...
No, she let all those people die so they would become closer to God.
That's true. Yeah. Mother Teresa was a huge Nine Inch Nails fan.
I want you to suffer like an animal.
You make me closer, you bring me closer to God.
So she's hanging out with this fancy nun. She's hoping that nun doesn't remember who she is. But of course she does. But, you know, it goes unsaid. And then,
they have an exchange.
Yeah, like later on.
No, right when she shows up, she goes, I bet you don't remember me. There was a time in the sewing class. And the famous girl goes...
So that story was from like 20 years earlier. She saw... So
it was a flashback.
When they were kids, they were in high school. They were in like middle school together. And then when they're both young adults and Helen Perry.
Helen Perry is the famous one.
Helen Perry was like was already famous. They were in their like 20s or something like that. And the narrator like goes to a protest that she's at and says, "I'm really sorry about what I did." And Helen Perry is like, "Who the fuck are you?" And he's like, "Oh, there was an incident in a sewing class." And then he goes, "Oh, that's right. That would have been a big event for you, but that was nothing for me."
It's literally the M. Bison like, line.
That was...
For me, it was a Tuesday.
B. Bison?
What?
M. Bison, but with mice. I was trying
mice,
to go for that.
Mice Bison. Mice and Bison. Mice and Bison.
I don't know. Tell us what you thought.
I think that was... So that was actually a flashback, and now Helen Perry is that right? Is
holy
to
shit. Live. It's been totally another 20 or 30 years at this point. Because at the point of this book, she's like in her... The narrator is in her 50s?
I have no idea.
Older?
Yeah. She's been around for a while. She was married for, what, 20-something years in the first part, and then she's 25 years or something, and it was failing then, and now it's been a few more years, so... It was a while, yeah. She was hoping she doesn't remember her again. Also, in this context, she'd be like, "Who the fuck is this?" Because she wasn't a nun before.
She's still not a nun. She's like a...
She's nun adjacent.
Yeah.
She's some. She's not nun.
Oh, son. That is... It's terrible. I hate you.
But then there's more and more mice. And there's more and more mice, and she's thinking about sad stuff that she remembers. And then... the Crusader lady is like, "I'm going to wait for this body." And eventually it shows up. I was like, "Oh, by the way, let's go see my mom. She's dying."
But the mom, who says, "See my mom"?
Helen Perry has to go see her mother, who was the abusive mother, one last time before she dies. That's also why she's in this neighborhood. And by neighborhood, I mean 4 billion square miles, because Australia is huge and empty.
This one was very mean. She was a... Slobodan Mouselovich. I'm trying to think of how to work that in somewhere. I'm sorry. Ceausescu. Okay, sorry.
Edie, your wires, I mean.
Chairman Mouse.
Mousemar Gaddafi. this book sucked. Okay, what happened next?
And then she goes to see her mom, and she's like, "Okay, I've experienced closure with my abusive mother." And then they're saying, like, "All we need to do is, we just need it to rain so that it'll drown the billions of mice." And eventually it does. And you have to imagine, it must be a fucking nightmare. There's a plague level of mouse bodies that they just never find.
They just flood out
mice
into
are water soluble.
The middle of Australia where nobody goes.
Hmm. The big sinkhole, it drains like a bathtub.
You can't say with confidence that doesn't exist.
No one's been to the center of Australia. It's too far from anything.
Is that the, they mentioned it, like the Nullarbor Plain, which I think is also in Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure, but.
Yeah, that's where it's near Mordor.
Yeah. Mordor, right next to it is Nullarbor. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the name the real estate people gave it to try and like upsell the neighborhood.
this is Mordor Crescent.
East Mordor. We're calling it Nullarbor now. Really up and coming. No families because orcs are born from mud, but you know, you can have some kids.
You know, it's called Nullarbor, but we're just going to call it NoHo, and then we're going to charge like five times as much for the rent.
Keep shortening it.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, honestly, there's what else happened in the book? Like, the plague ends, and she's sad, and the world is ending, and then she's like, you know, I'm out here doing nothing. I'm just going to keep trying to cook for these nuns. And she remembers a bunch of sad stuff. I'm trying to look back at all the things I highlighted, but it was just a lot of sad things. Just sad things.
And like just like random stories about like, oh, this man told me about this, you know, this guy who killed himself and then, you know, shot himself in the head. And then his wife and kids were like, no, I'm not sad.
Oh, yeah.
He was tormented every day of his life. You know, now finally this has come to an end. We don't have to live in fear of this happening every single day because it finally happened. And they're like, oh, wow, that's fucking really sad.
There was the one I liked that was a story. I went to a wedding with like an old boyfriend of mine and his brother. They were there for their sister's wedding, and his other brother had this girlfriend, Cleo, that no one liked because she was real difficult because she was a vegetarian. And the whole point of the story was, like, she tried to just keep to herself and, like, be nice to everybody and just, like, she brought her own food. She's like, oh, I can't eat that. I'm sorry.
She brought a peanut butter sandwich so she wouldn't have to eat the chicken or the steak.
But everyone was like, you got to fucking eat it or eat around it, you weirdo. And she's like, oh, I'm a good. No, thank you. And then she just went around being nice. And everyone was like, look at her drawing all attention to herself. What a bitch. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. People are shitty. No, this is the one that they talk about where her husband has an allergic reaction in the middle of the night and she gives him meds and calls an ambulance. And when they're taking him away, she's like, then I immediately had to take the biggest, messiest dump of my life. And it's like, this is like right near the end of the book. Like, this is the grand summation? Okay, I'm sure there's yeah.
Have you ever taken a shit that you were like, this might be the grand summation of my life?
I went to the toilet and sat down, and my bowels emptied completely. This is not pleasant to talk about, I know, but it happened. An urgent, steady, total voiding, the need for which had insisted on itself as soon as I knew my husband was in danger. It's like, oh, he's dying. I'm going to shit myself, but I'll clench until he's gone, and then I will unleash the heavens.
That's the flight or flush reflex.
Yeah.
When there's a crisis. I better shit now. You could also experience that by going to an Outback Steakhouse. Just any time of day.
What was the story about the girl who had an eating disorder, and her dad told everyone, it's because she's so disgusted by the ruinous morals of everyone around her that she is starving herself to draw away from this world. Everybody's like, oh, wow, that's so bold, so brave. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, he's Australian. He's like, that's not an eating disorder. Oh, okay.
This is an eating disorder.
Yeah, that's what that was. And all these little scenes are beautifully written, and you're like, oh, that was... I don't enjoy reading it, is not the right way to say it, but like the experience of reading it was fine. But then it's over, like, and then it gets back to like, what the fuck is happening in this book again? And then you just kind of, oh, okay, she's sweeping up mice again.
Yeah.
Or making it just potatoes. Kind of ends.
They get the bones back, and they said, we're just going to bury him, fuck him. And they bury her, and Helen Perry leaves, and the narrator is just there and just going to keep being a nun because why not? Or not being a nun, but, you know, living with the nuns. Because she's left. She ditched everything, said, I'm done. I'm not going to try anymore. I'm just going to hide, which is, you know, I guess how she has come to this point in her life. She's like, I just can't do it.
No, throughout this, there's lots of stuff about Catholic saints and little stories about different people. Like, I can't even remember their fucking names anymore. There was a bunch of them. I looked up a couple. I was like, is that real? I was like, oh, it is. You know,
about the girl that...
The Italian one who almost gets raped, and she forgives the guy because he stabbed her 15 times or something. And then he becomes a farmhand on a monastery. Like, what does this have to do with anything? Except...
She's a martyr.
Well, she's a saint. She's sainted. We streamlined... We got a whole bunch of them in the 90s and early 2000s. It was like Pokemon. Like, the Pope was like, got to catch them all? Catch this. And then he just added 1,200 fucking saints. Like, at a certain point, I think it was like, your miracle could have been you gave a 25% tip once. And then they were like, that's a saint. they were really adding saints at an egregious rate. But there's these little stories about that. And then there's the story about the other one. I have another one. Rosalind or something like that. I looked her up. I was like, is that real? Where her mummified carcass is sitting in a convent somewhere in France. Like, okay, there's a lot of cool Catholic shit. Which I realize I don't know anything about because like that's not what they actually teach you in Catholic school. They just teach you how to keep a secret. And then there's, you know, this is all about forgiveness, which is a big part of the Catholic mentality, but not really in this. I don't know. I didn't know. I felt like I was supposed to get something about that. And as a shitty Catholic, I felt bad.
It's not necessarily just about forgiveness, because it's she can't forgive, you know, herself mostly, or you know, people of the world for destroying it. Apparently, like another one where I looked up, like, why do people like this book? Because I didn't not like it. I, you know, it was okay. It wasn't, there was no real plot, but it was despair is a sin according to Catholics, because, you know, they just pick whatever the fuck they like to be sins because they do that. And she is here despair. She's in this place because she does not have any hope left for the world. And so it's, I don't know, there's some irony there, you know, living with the Catholics, unable to forgive herself, too much despair. But it is heavily meditative and symbolic. Or symbol laden, I don't know.
See, that's another one of those classic
allegorical.
You know, like the classic Catholic joke of the priest who asks, "Why are we supposed to be celibate?" And they go, "Oh, because of it says it in the archives." And he goes back, and he goes to another librarian. And he's like, "Oh, it's not here. It's in the deeper archives." And blah blah blah. And it goes on and on. And then he gets there, and then the librarian checks on him. They all come. That guy's been gone there for a while. And the guy is just weeping. And he goes, "It says celebrate." You know, it's a fucking terrible joke. The joke there is it's actually the biggest sin for the Catholics is to something about testicles, because it's like a despair right here. Despair is the biggest sin. It's a nuts on your chin joke. Maybe, I don't know, Nate, your family was Catholic adjacent. What did you make out of this book?
So I know I am not Catholic and know almost nothing about this stuff, but I actually was enjoying the book when I read it. I was like interested, and I liked it more than Enlightenment, so it had that going for it. And I was like, okay, this is okay. But also, I didn't know what it was about.
It's about everything.
It was about a bunch of sad fucking stories, being sad a lot. And you got to read between, it's kind of a book we got to read between the lines and just be like, oh, she is just really sad. She's gone off to this convent, even though she's an atheist, but she's like, I'm so sad, I'm going to live with the nuns. That must be really sad.
This is one of those books where it's not what they say, it's what they don't say. Ugh.
Yeah.
That's not how fucking writing works.
Sometimes it is.
No. Writers write what they say. This is about mute people. What did they not say? But yeah, that's exactly what it is.
We should read a book about like deaf people that takes place all in like, you know, in sign language and be like, it's about what they don't say.
That would be, no one's going to like that.
No. This book is about what they don't say.
Of the ones we've read so far, I liked this more than most of them. I didn't like love it by any means, but I kind of, you know, it was a nice little series of sad, depressing shit. And I don't know about the religiosity of the author. Like, it's not like Enlightenment where like that was her life growing up and so that's what she's writing about. Like, I don't know if this lady, if Charlotte Wood is Catholic or even religious. Or if it's all just metaphorical. Maybe it's, you know, faith is not even a refuge in these end times kind of thing. Or, you know, it's like, we're all fucked. And sometimes you just feel like giving up. And sometimes you do just give up. It's not a plot-heavy book. It's just a bunch of ideas. A bunch of sadness.
There's a little bit of plot because you've got both the... We're getting the bones of the murdered nun, and then we have to like, you know, finally get around to actually burying her. But then there's this stuff with the plague of mice, and it's like, you know, and it just keeps getting worse.
Well, the mice is, if I had to, you know, give my English 101 reason is that, you know, the mice plague is, it is in the book. It's not even symbolic. It's because of global warming. Climate change, because the climate is changing and it's drier, there's less rain to like deal with all these mice. These plagues happen more and more often, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And there's nothing you can do about it except hope that something makes it a little better for a little while. But that's it. There's nothing that can be done. You can't stop it. This is more of a meditation than a thriller, certainly. But it was better than half of the other books on this list.
This one was readable.
Yeah.
It moved.
And it's not overly long. It gets its point across, which is that we're fucked and time to kill ourselves. Did you like it, though? Did you like it?
It was okay.
Yeah, it was okay.
I was enjoying reading it. I was like, oh, this is nice.
In a depressing way.
Yes. This is a very sad book. And because it's sad, it has a higher chance of winning the Booker.
It has gravitas.
I don't think it's going to win.
Death is very... death and grief are very in vogue this year. Though maybe they always are. I don't know. But it feels like it's pretty heavy this time.
I don't know what the fuck they're looking for this time. The only thing I notice is that every author seems to have a PhD.
Yeah.
Not a good thing per se.
No.
Did this book use quotation marks? I think it did.
Yes, it did.
Which means it can't win.
But it had an unnamed narrator.
And it's dreamy and kind of out of sequence. Or hard to follow a little if you're not careful.
Yeah, it's kind of stream of consciousness where she's just like, then we brush up some mice. I remember when I found a dead body down by the train tracks as a young boy. You know.
Yeah.
And the local guy has to bring in a backhoe and all these like bags of lye. And it's like lime, and it's like you got to put the lime over the over the mouse corpses, over the millions of mouse corpses.
And then you put it on the coconut and shake it all up.
Should this win?
No,
I don't think it'll win. I don't think it should. I could see it on the short list, but there's still a bunch of books to read, and we'll see.
All right, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
We're going to give us a 5-star review because we want those. And get into the habit of giving us a 5-star review. And go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub to support the podcast and other things too.
And don't forget Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, Goodreads.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.